with that, let's get on to our conversation again with Mayor Jeremy Grimm here in the studio. Thanks for being here, Mayor Grimm. Well, we got a lot of stuff to talk about because there's always a lot going on with the city. But I think first thing is you got a new council, two new council people coming into this year that just took their seats on, I think on January 7th is when you swore them in.
Yep.
How do you shape up? Every time you get a change like that in the council, new people come on board, it can change kind of the direction that the council decides to go on things. Do you see anything happening there?
Yeah. I've been in that situation both as an employee of the city when I was the planning director and then certainly as mayor. It's you're feeling people out. You're trying to understand what people's priorities are. It all starts with education. Unless you happen to have a real hobby of this kind of thing, there's a lot of training and education in terms of legislative and quasi-judicial and the hearing process and the rules and how you even make motions and vote on things. So lots of education. I think right now the two new council members, Josh Torres and Joe Tate, are, they're at City Hall frequently during the week, learning a lot right now. And then it's just fleshing out, what their goals are and how they're going to work as a body to achieve those goals. Mm. That's the fun thing about this is our founding fathers and mothers really did a great job. We've got the legislative branch, which is the council, and individually they really don't represent anything but their own opinion. But collectively, you get four of them together and they can make action and take action to change the laws and the regulations. So it's always a kind of feeling out. I'm optimistic about this group. We seem to all have good relationships so far. So looking forward to doing some good work for the people of Sandpoint.
Mm-hmm. And my observation has been over the past several years that the city councils, they have split votes. Council members have disagreed on specific issues, but it's been a civil group, and it's, I guess you would say it's been fairly harmonious.
That's been one of my goals. I've as mayor, I only vote on issues if there's a tie. I've voted 8 or 10 times in the last 2 years to break ties. And I think that's really the big question, and is how do you work forward once you've not gotten the votes? Politics and this is a game of numbers. You need 4 votes to move something most times. We are working together. Sometimes we agree with one another. Sometimes we have different opinions. But it's really important to say, once you're done that issue or that vote, how do you move on and work with someone, and not harbor a grudge, not, be vindictive and say, oh, I'm going to get you at the next vote. I'm not going to support this. So that's really the most important thing is moving on quickly and getting on to the next item of business just working to improve the community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, bottom line, I think they all have the same goal. Is to make Sandpoint better. Just different ideas about how to get there.
You're right.
Sometimes. Well, let's talk about the very first meeting that the new council was on board with, and that was again January 7th. They were sworn in, and they immediately got handed an issue that was sparked a lot of conversation. And that was a land use agreement with Bridge Street LLC, which is the company that owns the property at Bridge Street and First Avenue, where there was a fire, destroyed the building. It's basically kind of a hole in the ground now. And the land use agreement was sought by the developer in order to allow the city to enlarge, to widen the sidewalk that runs right along there. It's only about 4 feet wide right now.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
There are safety concerns.
Oh, yeah.
People end up walking in the street on a really busy spot there at that. Right. At that intersection. Now you can kind of dig into this more than I can. The developer posted a performance bond that if he didn't
Build the wall
to enlarge that sidewalk himself, that the mm-hmm. city could use that money, I believe it's $380,000.
Correct.
To perform the work itself.
Yep.
And because it's been taking the developer a long time to actually do anything there,
right.
He's not done that. The city wants to move ahead and get that sidewalk enlarged. Mm-hmm. But the developer was saying, I need a land use agreement in order to let the city get on my property and do the work on that retaining wall. Otherwise, it'd be trying to do it from the street would be very expensive.
That's right.
And on that vote, it came down to 4-2. The two new guys, Joe Tate and Joshua Torres, joined council members Pam Duquette and Kyle Schreiber voting against approving a land use agreement. And the councilors Deb Rule and Joel Aspero voted in favor of it.
Right.
Well, unpack that for us.
Sure. So you described it well. We've got the hole in the ground on Bridge and First with that ugly, rusted sheet piling that's holding up the ground. This all goes back to a land swap agreement I believe it was 2020, before I was in office. So the city swapped land with the owner of the hole in the ground, Bridge Street LLC. And in exchange for that land swap, the Bridge Street LLC got land that went all the way down to Sand Creek, just about all the way down to Sand Creek, where right now you can drive down that little hill.
There's a little access into that area behind Gunnings Alley.
And in exchange for that, the city got, I'm going to call it 12 feet, I don't know the exact dimensions, north of Bridge Street. So where the very narrow sidewalk and the sheet piling is, we got more land into the hole in the ground. And as part of that agreement, as you said, the developer was going to build a building in the hole in the ground and a wall there and a sidewalk. So the goal was to enhance pedestrian safety on arguably one of the busiest, most congested sections of sidewalk in town. If you've seen Bridge and First in the summer, you got people shoulder to shoulder, you got boat traffic coming in and out, RVs, delivery trucks. It's a very congested and narrow area. So the goal was to widen that sidewalk, rip out that sheet piling.
We'll widen the sidewalk without having to infringe more on the street.
Correct, without narrowing the street. Yeah. Rip out that sheet piling, do all that work. And to do that, yes, we have to get inside the hole down below and build up. As you said, the developers just simply wanted guaranteed access from the north side, from sort of the Panada coming down. And that's what the council didn't want to approve or voted not to approve, is that land transfer or a restriction or a guarantee that he's always going to be able to get a vehicle there. The good news is that the previous council approved this work contract. So I am still, as of today, working with the developer to try to get that sidewalk expanded. That contract and approval has been signed. And I believe we're going to reach an agreement where he doesn't need that guaranteed documented access from the north. Because in reality, fire trucks are always going to have to be back there. We've got utilities back there. It's always going to, in all likelihood, be asphalt back there, what we call Gunnings Alley. Mm-hmm. So, a little bump in the road, but hopefully moving forward.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a lot of discussion. A lot of different points came up. One that kind of caught my attention was some of the councilors were saying, can we reverse this land trade that gave the little waterfront section to the developer in order to, and just go backwards on that? And the response on that would be?
I guess anything's possible, but this was a land use swap, an agreement, legal agreement that occurred. And, both parties at the time felt they were benefiting. I wouldn't say it's impossible, but the time, energy, cost, negotiating, it's really... It seems simple, but it would probably cost $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 in attorney's fees to go back and forth on the agreement. So,
and the developer would have to say, I want to do that.
Yeah, and right now he's got waterfront property, why would you? Why would he want to unpack that?
Yeah,
so it's always the question of, and I've taken a new philosophy. I realize the world's far from perfect, but can you do you know, good enough? Can you get do some good for the public? And in this case, I wasn't a huge fan of land swap either, but it's kind of water under the proverbial bridge.
Right,
and
there, yeah.
Let's move on. And what can we do in the time we have to improve the city and make it safer, better, more enjoyable for our residents and visitors?
Mm-hmm. And you did show some maps of the property back there behind what we call Gunnings Alley, or mm-hmm. It's called Farmer's Landing, I believe.
Correct.
And that area back there, where right now it's just a bunch of people parking back there.
Right.
But the property owners own out quite a ways towards the creek, and if they elect to build their buildings out that far, they could do that.
Yes, you're correct. So if you are behind, and again, if you're not familiar, this is behind Panhandle, was it Panhandle Cone, yep. Behind Zero Point, pretty much all those buildings on the east side of First Ave. You can drive back there. There's some city-owned land back there with asphalt on it, but it's really only about between 14 and, you know, maybe 20 feet wide, the city-owned property, mm-hmm. And that's the area closest to the creek. All that other asphalt right up to the buildings is private property.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so and there have been plans to try to...
hotels, all sorts of concepts and plans to build buildings.
For those different buildings there. And there's been plans to pretty up that parking
lot. Stormwater improvements. Yeah. That was sort of the city's original vision, or most recent vision, was doing some stormwater improvements down there, maybe expanding the boardwalk back there. So we still have options to work forward. But I think one of the things that everyone has to wrap their head around is government moves fairly slowly. It's incredibly frustrating coming from a private sector business, how slowly we move. I mean, you got to get a meeting together, you got to coordinate schedules, you got to vet things with attorneys. So, you know, all these things are going to take many, many years, which, you know, I'll point out phase three, which is a much more exciting topic here that we can talk about. Phase three of downtown revitalization is kicking off. And that's been in the works for over a decade. Mm-hmm. So just for a point of reference, a decade to, you know, rebuild a street. So,
And this is phase three. There have been two previous phases. One was all the sidewalk work that was done on Cedar Street. Then the second phase came down First Avenue as far as, just about as far as Bridge Street, right? Not quite that far, yeah.
Right, yeah. So, you know, again, to frame some things, this is going to be my 48th meeting-ish as mayor tonight at City Council. I have about 46 left, so I'm on my downward slope here. I'm not running again for mayor. And one of the things that I just want to emphasize is the world is a pretty crazy place these days if you follow global politics and economics and AI and everything else. And one of the things I really was interested in as being mayor is just to keep things pretty, a little more calm, a little slower, not as fast-paced as they had been by the previous administration with, you know, 25 projects going at once. We have a couple of pretty simplistic projects that we're trying to accomplish in the next, at least I'm trying to accomplish in the next 2 years. Nothing crazy radical. It's pretty much phase three, which is, again, First Avenue from Oak all the way, or Bridge down to Superior. And then the wastewater treatment plant. We'll be doing a couple of small other road projects. We don't have a lot of money for roads. Finally, we're going to implement some paid parking downtown at the City Beach parking lot and the city parking lot. And then if we're lucky, we can continue just providing great services to our residents and businesses. So nothing really radical, just pretty much some basic services and kind of keep things trucking along. But phase three, downtown revitalization, is kicking off this spring. It's going to be a total rebuild of First Avenue, everything that hasn't been done. So from Bridge down to Superior, the public's going to have a lot of opportunity to get involved in this. We want to get it right. We want to have a low impact on our businesses. And that will really cap off the big investment downtown Sandpoint.
Mm-hmm. And that, you say it's going to kick off in spring?
That's correct.
And it'll probably be a full summer.
The design, so the schedule is design will start. We've got a technical advisory committee, some folks from our citizens committees that will sort of define the scope of work for the contractors and the designers. That will result in what we call a 30% plan. That 30% plan has all the confirmed widths of the right-of-way and dimensions and utilities, so we kind of know what we're working with. That will go out to the public at an open house. We'll take some very robust public comment. That public comment will be incorporated into the design as we get from 30 to 90%. Once we get to 90%, we'll do another public open house to make sure nothing's off kilter, and engagement with various property owners, of course, this technical advisory group. And then we will hopefully go out to construction late this fall for phase three.
Oh, I see. Okay. Construction would actually start in fall.
Yeah. And continue until through the winter. Yeah. And we really want to try to avoid and minimize impact, pretty much lost in the 50s Memorial Day, you know, into the summer. So we'll try to do it fall of 27. Through winter and spring of fall of 26, winter and spring of 27.
Yeah, and it does entail closing that road, right?
The street. Depending on the design, there'll be temporary opens and closures and things like that.
So. Yeah, people will remember the work that was done.
Phase one and two.
And phases one and two. It's a big project. And it gives you an opportunity to get down the ground and fix some infrastructure underneath the street
too. Yeah, new water, sewer, stormwater pipes, why we have the street all ripped up, get all that stuff taken care of, generally make downtown, you know, this is all the culmination of the byway moving, US 95 moving out of downtown. If you're new here, Chris and I remember, but not too long ago, there was three lanes of truck traffic going right through First Ave.
Love those cattle trucks.
Oh, man.
And the reason we had the state actually controlled First Avenue Cedar Street, it was part of the state highway system.
In Superior,
And so when they built the byway, they relinquished their control of that back to the city, and the city can now do stuff it wants to do.
That's right. We control and own those. We're making them, as somebody would expect a downtown street to be, wider sidewalks, places for sidewalk cafes, innovative stormwater treatment, good parking access, safe pedestrian and bicycle crossings and things like that.
And, you know, there are other factors, of course, but I will say that the work that's been done on along First Avenue, where we do have sidewalk cafes happening in the summer.
That's right.
You just see a lot more people downtown now. Yeah.
This is in the planning world, and if you don't know, I'm a land use planner. We call these civic spaces. In the planning world, you have three places. You have your home, your work, and then these third places are these civic spaces. Maybe it's a coffee shop or a pub, or it can be the public realm down there. So sitting on a cafe street corner and just visiting with friends, seeing neighbors, watching people. Yeah, good stuff.
Mm-hmm. Builds community.
Yep.
I believe. Okay, well, one more question on this, the revitalization project. Because it's happening right there where the Bridge Street Junction is, this was mentioned at the January 7th council meeting. Some of the council members said, well, can't we just wrap that into the project, the sidewalk expansion into the project to do the revitalization?
Sure.
Do those things get connected?
They're different pots of money. So again, the owner of the hole in the ground has put up cash to do this work. So we're not using a very small amount of taxpayer dollars. We're using his money to do this sidewalk. So to wrap it into the other project, I suppose technically it would be possible, but that Bridge Street project is going to not take place for another year. And in my mind, this is something we can do pretty simplistically right now, build a sidewalk, get it done, eliminate the hazard of, hundreds and hundreds of people a day, if not thousands, walking on a 3-foot sidewalk on one of the busiest streets in town.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, let's turn to another topic. also kind of a hot potato. So the Parks and Recreation Commission met about a week ago and to consider the either the upgrade to the RV park at City Beach or to recommend a different sort of use there on right. that property. And it turned into hot potato because Averill Hospitality came out rather forcefully against maintaining an RV park there and you know, sent a letter to the city basically saying, if you do that, we can't do our hotel.
That's right.
And a lot of people, that really set off a lot of people that are unhappy about, you know, development that's going on in general.
Yep.
And, of course, City Beach, that's our crown jewel.
Our gem, yeah. yeah. Sacred space.
Yes. And the Parks and Rec Commission, actually the city staged a public workshop in December.
That's right.
And it was an overfull crowd. I was there.
Yeah, we got some great input. Great yeah. input. They and so that's the Parks and Rec Commission. They are advisory. So the mayor and council, we use those commissions to give us feedback because obviously we can't do all the work. So yes, to kind of bookend this and paraphrase it, you know, Averill Hospitality, there's another land swap under the previous administration where the Cox family used to own that RV park down there. If you've been here and followed along, Averill Hospitality bought the Edgewater Hotel, have plans for this new, very large, improved hotel and conference center, which would be really exciting and beneficial to our downtown, our community. As part of all that, when they purchased it, you may recall the downtown waterfront design competition. Well, that competition included a significant amount of amenities down in the City Beach and along First Ave and the waterfront. And those did not include an RV park. I have to take some responsibility for this because when I became mayor 2 years ago, that plan I basically put in the trash can because... for a variety of reasons we can get into, or you can contact me if you want to know why, but primarily because of the cost. We could never afford to do it. And when I dug into the budget, I realized, wow, we are really in a very challenging situation with the city budget. And I looked at the RV park. It was generating, let's call it $80,000 of income a year for the city. That goes right into maintaining our parks. And I said, whoa, we can't get rid of the RV park. That's you know, an employee and a half. That's a lot of money for us. So I asked Jason Welker to look for some funding. Can we improve that? And it turns out there are grants for RV park enhancement. So we were successful. We got about $1 million grant to improve that RV park.
From the state of Idaho.
From the state of Idaho, paid by registration fees for off-road vehicles and recreational vehicles. So that was approved. And we were about to proceed with an upgrade to the RV park, thinking that an upgraded RV park will bring in even more revenue. If you're familiar with it, it's pretty
basic.
It's very basic.
It's a gravel lot.
Still brings in yeah. pretty good amount of money for the city. So that was the thought, is let's enhance it, try to get some more revenue, try to maintain our parks with that revenue. And Averill Hospitality said, whoa, that was never in the plan. What about the downtown waterfront design competition? You've kind of switched things up. And they expressed their discontent with that. They said, we're building a very nice resort, and we don't see these being compatible land uses. So we went out to the public, kind of vetted with the public. What would you like to see happen with this land, which is encumbered? It has to be basically a park or city park type use. And we're going to get an update on that from Jason Welker and the Parks and Rec Commission. And based on the council decision, we can either proceed with the improvements of the RV park or they could pivot some other direction. In my mind, it would be unfortunate if we're making these knee-jerk reactions. I mean, let me just say, Averill Hospitality, they build incredible facilities. We do need a convention center and the Edgewater is old and tired. You know, it would be nice to get a restaurant down at City Beach again and really make that a public active space. So in my opinion, when that happens, it's really not consequential to me. It's going to happen someday. It's probably one of the nicest piece of properties in the West, on a lake, right downtown. Somebody's going to develop it. But I think we really need to focus on, you know, the solvency of our budget. And, you know, that RV park provides a lot of really great opportunities for visitors to come and stay in vans or RVs. Family members who are visiting can, you know, park an RV there. So in general, I'm pretty supportive of an RV park being there. That's what it is today. It's not a real big change for the public. And most importantly, it's going to sound cold, but it's all about the money in terms of the city's budget. That RV park plugs a big hole in our budget. And that's going to be really difficult this next 2 years. If you're not aware, at the state level, things are getting incredibly tight. We're going to have some real challenges with the budget this year.
Yeah, we're seeing that with the state level for sure. So the Parks and Rec Commission, when they met last week, they voted to recommend that they retain and upgrade the RV park. At the workshop that had been held in December, there were a lot of other ideas about how that property might be used. Some folks contended that, you know, as a resident of Sandpoint, you know, residents don't stay at the RV park. There's other uses we could have there, multiple use for events, additional parking, get the boat trailers out of the main parking lot. A whole range of ideas came up there.
Some great ideas.
But one thing that Averill came forward with was that they might be willing to offset the lost revenue to the city. And has there been any further discussion on that? If the city went with a different sort of use there, more multiple use maybe?
You know, nothing formal. That's sort of, there were some suggestions that they could, you know, fund and make up that lost revenue from RV generation, RV park rentals. Nothing formal. I'm all ears. If somebody or the Averills have an opportunity to keep us whole, so to speak, I'm open to it. But, you know, for now, it's just trying to move forward and improve our situation down there. So
some of the discussion at the Parks and Rec Commission meeting was that, we have this kind of verbal suggestion from Averill that they would help cover the lost revenue there, but we don't really have anything.
No, there's no formal proposal. No formal proposal. Yeah, we'll just have to wait and see how this all shakes out.
So the recommendation now will be to the city council. The city council gets to make the ultimate decision on this.
That's right.
When will that be taken up?
I believe Director Welker, Planning and Community Development Director, is going to give us an update tonight. And then, you know, in general, we have the state grant, the $950,000 grant. We have to keep moving on that. So I'm going to call it late March, April, we got to be into the design and show the state that we are proceeding with that grant work and that design of the new park.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's a big factor, and we've got to make a decision on this and not fool around too long.
Yeah. There's a couple of big, time constraints coming up. The other is, we can talk about is I'm really excited and, hope the public, supports. I want to bring back a 1% local option tax vote this spring, this May on the ballot. So I'd love to talk about that because, that is, one of the few ways that the city can plug some of these holes. And as running the city gets more expensive each year, we are constrained by the state legislature. We can only increase our general property tax budget by 3% a year. And as we all know, inflation, the cost of running a business is more than 3% a year.
Just you have more people you need to serve because we're growing so much.
That's right.
All right, let's switch to that right now. So this kind of a announcement to me. I knew that we city was likely to pursue the local option tax again, but as you just said, you're going to move that we actually have that vote in this upcoming May 19th primary.
Right. So if you're not familiar, we did try a local option tax fall of 2000, 2000 or spring, I forget, my first term. That was going to be a 1% sales tax in the city of Sandpoint, dedicated primarily to roads and alleys. If you've been following, you know, our roads are in horrible shape. And frankly, I'm sorry, public, but there's just no money to do the roads by the time we pay everything else. This year, I think we'll end up putting about $250,000 into
bare maintenance budget.
Yeah, basically. A grind. We're going to do Pine Street between Division and Boyer. That's the big one. We're supposed to do it this fall, but the weather turned. But we're going to do that this spring. And then we've been saving up for 2 years to do Cedar between Lincoln and Division, just north of the library. And that's an expensive one. That's about a couple $1 million. Anyways, in Idaho, if you're a town of less than 10,000 people, you can put out to the voters this local option tax as a voter decision. And the thought is that we will put it out there. I need to get council approval on the actual ballot language. Put it out there for streets, roads. But the other thing that I heard about when we passed our sewer bond, and that sewer project, you'll recall, is $130 million. Voters approved that bond authority. If we actually draw on all that bond and build that new sewer plant at that rate, our sewer rates will double. So right now they're roughly about $100 just for sewer a month for a single family. They would go up to $200, which is, without a doubt, some of the highest sewer rates in the country. I mean, this is so far out there. It's really challenging for any household to support that. But thanks to the voters for giving us that faith and giving us time.
By a huge margin.
Oh, yeah, 90%. Yeah. My research said, 89 is the highest bond approval of any bond election in the state of Idaho.
Yeah. So the voters recognize we need to deal with this issue that's been talked about for years. But it's going to, as you mentioned, it's going to double rates.
Yep. So the voters also, you know, we were pretty clear in our communication. We're going to work really hard to find grant funding. We're going to find other ways to creatively fund this sewer plant. Unfortunately, the federal government is massively in debt, not offering us any federal grant dollars. The state of Idaho has offered us about $3.8 million in grants for a sewer plant. And of course, everything else is loans. So we need to figure out a way to fund this. And what I heard during that bond election from some folks is, why aren't outsiders and tourists and other folks helping to pay for the sewer plant upgrade and replacement? So the thinking is that in this 1% local option tax, we could dedicate a portion, I don't know if it's 10%, 15, 20, whatever, a portion of that local option tax collection to pay down that sewer debt, which will hopefully keep our rates from actually doubling. And we're doing some other things that are trying to reduce the scale of that project. That's primarily where most of my work is focused with our Public Works Department right now, working with DEQ to try to build a facility that is not $130 million.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so how does this council have to approve this?
They have to approve the bond language, and we have to get that to the county by March. So in the next two, three weeks, we're going to be having discussions about what's best to put on that ballot. Again, I think personally roads, sewer, you know, people don't know, Spot Bus is funded entirely by our lodging tax in town. Without the Edgewater Hotel being occupied, we're looking at about a little more than $100,000 hit on that in our budget
Now. Yeah, in the near term until a new hotel.
And if they demolish it and build a new hotel, we're looking at a couple years with no lodging tax revenue or reduced lodging tax revenue. So maybe some funding for Spot Bus, our public transit, and that lodging tax also funds some of our fire and police employees during the summer when we have these larger events. We have to respond, and so we have a larger police and fire force than we'd otherwise need, and that is offset by the lodging tax as well. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting. Hopefully we can get some voter support for that to keep our sewer rates down. And the nice thing about the 1% local option tax is that about 40 or 50% of it is paid by non-city residents, so visitors and folks from away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's 1 cent spent per dollar spent on
any retail sales, any sales.
In town, yeah, yep. Right. So it, that does spread out the cost burden to all the people that come into Sandpoint who use our services here but don't pay
any property taxes.
Any property taxes.
That's right.
Yeah. So, okay, well, that's a bit of news right there. And let's circle back real briefly here on Avril Hospitality and the City Beach. They submitted their application for a building permit December 29th.
Yep.
Which just got them in under the increased fees that went up January 1st.
That's right. We implemented, the council and myself and staff, we implemented new development impact fees. They more than doubled in some cases. And those are to ensure that development pays its fair share of the added cost to grow city services. So those were scheduled to go into effect January 1st. So yes, Avril Hospitality got their building permit in under the old fees before those were actually put in place.
So has the plan changed from what they released earlier? I don't know if you know this yet, but has that changed? And then is there a time limit? Do they have to get started within a certain period of time?
Yes. Yes on the time limit. No, you know, have they changed? This is always an interesting topic. We use the word materially change. Has there been a substantial change? No. In general, the design and the plan is what people saw. You know, some of the materials and the exact dimensions might have changed a percentage or 5%, but no. Generally, it's the same plan, same location, real attractive design. And in terms of the timing, yes, once you submit a building permit and it's approved, you have to actually act on it. So you can't just, you know, let it sit out there for 5 years. I believe it's 180 days you have to make progress towards completion of that building. Mm-hmm. Also, it can be revoked.
Okay. Well, we're going to switch up to a whole different topic now. We haven't had you on here for several months, and we're going to dip back to November when the council was deadlocked on a proposal, I think from you, that the city amend its non-discrimination ordinance that was adopted in 2011. You ended up casting some tie-breaking votes on that. So give us your rationale on the decision to change the non-discrimination ordinance.
Sure. Obviously, this is not a topic that I was looking to put front and center at the city. It's a divisive, you know, topic culturally across the country. And when I say divisive, we're talking about the real impetus for this, which was the, and I don't know all the details, I should say, alleged incident at the YMCA regarding a trans woman and a cisgender woman in the woman's locker room. I think most folks are kind of familiar with what went down there.
The cisgender woman said she doesn't want to see a trans woman in the locker room because
correct.
She thinks it's inappropriate.
Correct. Yeah. I think
or even dangerous.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep. So as that played out, you know, it came out that the YMCA was asked, why are you allowing biological men at birth to go into your female locker rooms? And they said, well, it was a city of Sandpoint requirement, and it's the city of Sandpoint law. So, of course, I looked at the law, and I believe it was 2012 or 13, the Sandpoint was one of the groundbreakers in the state of Idaho to broaden their public accommodation and non-discrimination regulations. And within that ordinance that the city adopted was a gender identity component, and it required that the city not tolerate any kind of discrimination and ensure public accommodation. And that's the big one, public accommodation for any business in the city for gender identity. So when you look at that, I was like, oh, they're right. It's a city ordinance. The YMCA was right. In that ordinance, there's a lot of components. if there's a claim or allegation of discrimination, it then kicks off several actions. One is a human relations review board. They write to the complainant and the business or the other, you know, nonprofit, whatever it may be. You have to respond. They review the response and the incident. Then they can require the two parties to go to mediation that the parties have to pay for. And then depending on success of mediation, this would result in potentially a prosecution of the offending business that could be a misdemeanor. So $1,000 fine and I believe 6 months in jail. So all of these things fall under what are our powers as a city. And in Idaho, we run under something called Dillon's Rule. Look it up if you're not aware of it. Cities only have the powers and rights that the state legislature gives us and the state constitution gives us. So we don't have the right to do a lot of things we'd like to do in the city because we just don't have that. So when I looked at the situation, I felt like we were going to be caught in the middle of a, you know, a challenging cultural issue right now. And, it was a lose-lose situation. So what do you do? How do you extract standpoint from a debate that's going to be settled in the courts ultimately?
And it was a very hot debate right here in this town.
Yeah, no.
Because of the thing happenings.
We had hundreds of folks. I think there was about 300 people at the council chambers there. And lots of testimony, really emotional testimony. And I guess valid perspectives across the board, right? So I said, you know, what do we do as a small town to settle this and avoid litigation? And again, hard, cold Jeremy Grimm here, I'm worried about our budget. Just to defend our former non-discrimination ordinance would have been easily tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars, if somebody wanted to challenge that in court. Because under Dillon's rule, the state could say, you do not have the right to make a protected class. There's some case law out there, you can look it up, about cities that have overstepped their legal abilities. And the Supreme Court of the state has slapped them down, and it can be very expensive to defend that sort of thing. So what I proposed was an ordinance that simply said, we do not discriminate in Sandpoint. We do not tolerate discrimination. We follow state and federal discrimination regulations and laws and protections. And if somebody's discriminated against, those are their channels for remedies, the Idaho Human Relations Board or the U.S. Supreme Court. So what I was trying to do with all this is extract our community and not let it rip us apart and divide us because it's really nothing we can solve locally. It's something that the Supreme Court, the Idaho State Supreme Court, will have to solve. And I believe the legislature is going to address that this session. Just this week, we had the U.S. Supreme Court dealing with this issue of trans women playing on sports teams that we don't have a decision yet. So it's dynamic. The one thing I'll say is, you know, I know it's a painful and emotional and very real issue for our community. I had some businesses reach out and say, I just hope we don't keep talking about it because the reverb and the ramifications are really damaging. So, you know, not to say let it just lay, but I hope we all know this community is a loving community. It's a very tolerant community. People enjoy diversity here. Let's let the courts determine what this direction is and not let it be something that pits businesses and residents and folks against one another.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we will put that one to rest for now and see what the state and the federal government come up with on it, I suppose. And to switch to a whole different topic.
Paid parking, sewer plans?
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the parking plan. And I think it's mostly together, but I don't know if it's been officially approved yet. And it is going to be a bit of a sea change because there's going to be at least some spots that people are going to pay to park in.
That's right. Yeah. So super exciting, in my opinion. So just yesterday, we interviewed one of two finalists, which is going to be our parking technology provider. These are national companies, sometimes international, that have all the equipment and technology to set up paid parking. Over the course of the last year and a half, we've done extensive inventory analysis of who's using our parking lots and our parking spaces. And what we found out is, you know, basically the city parking lot and City Beach are being used by a huge number of folks from outside the area. And in order to ensure that the burden of maintaining those facilities isn't placed solely on Sandpoint residents, we are going to implement a paid parking permit for City Beach and downtown parking lot, probably the former, the small parking lot where the former hotel was.
The Lakeview
Hotel, thank you, yeah. Which is on Bridge Street.
Oh, actually, Lakeside Hotel.
Lakeside, yeah. That's right. And maybe out at the water treatment plant at the entrance to the Bay Trail. So we looked at and we're interviewing what technologies are there. We want it to be friction-free or as friction-free as possible for users, so it's not a burden. Once we choose that provider, we'll bring that whole package to the council and they will finalize what the permit fees and the rates are going to be. Right now, it's looking like it's very modest. So somewhere in the order of $12 to maybe $14 a year for a city resident, and about double that for a county or non-city resident.
So this is a pass that lets you park in these lots. Yep. Otherwise, if you're from out of town, you don't have a pass.
Yeah. So like if you go to Coeur d'Alene or many other towns, most other towns our size, you can scan a QR code or you can walk up to one of those kiosks where you punch in the spot number that you're parked and you get a little ticket. And you put it in your windshield. That hopefully will all be implemented by June. It's a lot of work to get that up and running by then. And the big thing is we expect that to generate, you know, we don't know the actual numbers, but we've had some forecasts between $250,000 and $350,000 a year. And that's really significant. I know that might not sound like a lot to people. That I think of employees. What are and asphalt and what are the costs? So with that kind of dedicated revenue, we make sure that the parking lot that we just repaved and invested in, when that ends its useful life, we'll have the money to replace that. And it's not going to be a continual burden on the Sandpoint taxpayers.
Mm-hmm. And if you buy your county or city residence, you buy one of these passes, would you get a little sticker to put in your window or something like that?
There's a couple different ways to do it. You can register your license plate. And when you pull into the parking lot, you type in your license plate and it knows that you have a pass. Stickers are another option that they mail out. You buy it and you just put the sticker on your vehicle. So that's what we're trying to understand right now is the different finalists who are going to provide this technology. What is it that they use? And one of the coolest things that we will likely implement is a sign, multiple signs downtown that will show how many empty parking spots there are at City Beach or at the city parking lot. So that people coming up First Ave or down First Ave will know instantly there's 25 open spaces at City Beach or there's no open spaces. And if there's no open spaces, there's no need to go and congest and circle and do loops down there because you'll know that there's parking space elsewhere.
So and one last question on this. So how's the enforcement handled? So if people go and they park, they don't pay.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So they have these devices that sit up on the telephone poles or the streetlights, and they shoot down lasers, and they map the spaces and the vehicles. They can tell that the footprint or the size and shape of a vehicle, and they know when that vehicle comes in, and they know if that spot has been entered into the kiosk. And if a vehicle pulls in and it's not, it sends a map to the enforcement officer, and he gets a flashing red symbol on his iPhone, and he goes down and issues a citation.
Okay, it's very specific.
Yes,
there's a scoff law in this one spot. You'll
yes,
get them. Yeah,
yeah, and you can also extend with technology if you're having a good time at the Panada or out at wherever you're at downtown, you can just click on the app and say, oh, I want to add another 2 hours and stay longer.
You don't have to go back to your car. Right. Yeah. Yeah, technology.
And we'll probably just implement it seasonally. I'm just guessing that this will probably just be a, call it May to October type thing. And then, because that's really when we're seeing the majority of the congestion and the problem.
Bet, from the, all the tourism. Okay, well, we have just a few minutes left here. And I want to ask you if you got anything you want to bring up, but real quick, how's it going with the James Russell Sports Center?
Boy, hats off to city staff. You know, it's going really, really well. We now have, I think it's generating about $17,000 a month in reoccurring revenue from membership. This is, you know, we've been doing this for a year and 2 months, 3 months. It got off to a pretty rough start where it was looking like we weren't going to be able to cover our costs to manage or even come close to covering our costs to run that facility. The way it's tracking right now, thanks to Ryan and Jason and Cammy and a bunch of great volunteers down there, we are clearly going to offset, I'd say, at least 90% of the cost to run that. So big, big deal. Community's really embraced it. We've adjusted the pricing and the membership. There's all sorts of activity down there. There's tournaments. There's multi-use going on. We've got soccer, lacrosse, cornhole, fly fishing, all sorts of good stuff. So that has been a real success this year, and I think it's going to serve the public very well in the future. But we've learned now that there's a lot of demand for indoor space, and probably need another building like that somewhere. So if you want
to, well, I hate to bring it up again, but basketball and volleyball, those two user groups have been kind of disenfranchised the last
and softball too, honestly. That's one of the things now that we've kind of got our feet under us, we're going to be looking at bringing back some of the rec coordination. The last 2 years, we really stepped away from coordinating some of those programs. So we're looking at reinvigorating that and coordinating volleyball, basketball, and softball. That's what we hear a lot of people wanting.
Okay. Well, in just the couple minutes we have left, open mic, Mayor Grimm.
A couple things. One, you know, it's never too early to start thinking about dedicating some years of your life to service to this community. As I mentioned, I will not be running for mayor in 2 years. So first, just if anyone is out there and has an interest in serving the public, just start doing your homework, start learning, reach out to me. I'm happy to give you sort of the Reader's Digest version or even the detail of what we're doing and how this all works. So we need some good people to serve. And, if we don't have people stepping up to serve as an elected official, you're gonna get what you get. So it's really important for people to recognize that this system of government that we have only works if people volunteer their blood, sweat, tears, and treasure to the process. So secondarily, just on a high level, we've got, I think on the vision for the next 2 years is what do we do to keep Sandpoint trucking along? And how do we make this the best community we can and retain all the characteristics that, either attracted people here or made it, I would argue, the best place to raise a family and kids in the world. So that takes a lot. The big direction, at least as I see it, is ensuring that economic opportunity exists here. And that means growth of the complexity of our economy. Tourism's a nice benefit and provides a good base, but those jobs really do not provide the benefits, the income, and the other attributes that other businesses like De Haer or aircraft engineering or food production or computer analytics add. So we really want to focus on growing our economy and the complexity of our economy so we can ensure that Sandpoint is a place where everyone has economic opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Yes, affordability and housing, all those issues that go with that as well.
That's right.
Well, that's another discussion. We are out of time. Officially, Mayor Jeremy Grimm, I'm going to say thank you for taking time to come in and fill us all in.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. Great to be here. And please reach out if you have questions and don't believe what you read on Facebook.
we got to say amen to that. And we're going to go out with a little bit of John Prine. Thank you so much for listening today and have a great week.